Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is The Bottom Line with Jessica English, and I am joining you today from a sunny 90-degree, lush, green St. Paul, Minnesota. How is everyone today? I hope you have some questions ready for my guest. The number to call is 646-929-2495. Press 1 to get in the queue, and I will identify you when I bring you into the conversation by your area code. So the first person I'm going to bring on today is our Coffee Party President, Eric Beiler. And Eric, how are you today? He's really interested in our topic. And how are you doing today, Eric?
I am doing great, and I am interested in this topic. Tyson Slocum, your guest, is actually one of the experts on the ways in which large corporations, Wall Street oil companies, manipulate energy prices, gouge consumers, and really hurt our economy. And I'm interested because I lived through one of the worst instances of this, the Enron fleecing of the state of California when they manipulated electricity prices. And we had rolling blackouts. I was living in Los Angeles. You know, we had people having to suffer through worse than 90-degree heat with, without having electricity because we couldn't afford to buy the electricity that Enron was illegally manipulating. And it just led to, I mean, all of the financial problems that California has today. It led to a change of governor. This was how we had ended up with Governor Schwarzenegger. It's quite a story you can see in the movie Enron, Smartest Guy in the Room. So I can't wait for you to get on the horn with Tyson, who has a whole new expose to share with you. So, yeah, thanks for having me on with you.
Thank you. Thanks so much for joining us. And I look forward to your comments and questions later on in the show for Tyson. And this week, I want to let everybody know who's listening and you too, Eric. This week, I posted my favorite Facebook post, which I wouldn't have been able to do if I was suffering from a rolling blackout. Can't even imagine that. Oh, my gosh. And as addicted as I am to Facebook, all my friends in my circle, we call it the face because it's not doesn't seem like that much of a book. But anyway, our favorite Facebook post of the week, I posted it to our Scoop It page, and you guys can check it out at scoop.it/the-bottom-line. And when you get there, you can scroll down the page a bit, and you will see a color picture of an old-timey UFO, and like the ones in the movies from the 1950s. And it's coming through the trees, and it is accompanied with the statement, "If aliens came and poisoned half our rivers and wiped out one wild species out of 10 and dismantled entire mountaintops and laced agricultural lands with poisons and put cancerous materials in our children's toys and torched and hacked down our forests, and radically changed our atmosphere, would we get the Supreme Court to declare them persons and give them all our money? Or would we mobilize to stop them?" That post was created by Joseph Harms, and I have to give him credit because I think that is a really great question. Why does this stuff go on? Why did Enron happen and all of those rolling blackouts? And, you know, what are we going to do about it? My team here at The Bottom Line, every week, we aren't here just to distract our listeners, right? We're not here to bring the next horror story to immobilize you with fear. We are here for an engaging discussion with very informative guests to bring us the knowledge we need to know about certain practices on Wall Street and to bring hope, to allow for questions, debate, discussion, in order to bring some resolve. To create some resolve among us and the people and the activists so that we can do what we can do. And We do everything here with civility, so we do have a Pledge of Civility. If you'd like to check it out, you can go to our website, Coffee Party USA. And in that vein, I bring you today's show, just starting out with a great question. Do we really want to, get our Supreme Court to declare them persons and give them all our money? And how are we going to mobilize to stop this? So let's get to the heart of the matter. Today, the team is bringing you the bottom line on lawlessness and Wall Street profiteering. And first, the effect it has not only on our energy prices, but also how much it feeds into our sixth cycle of addiction, or what we call the fossil fuel industry. Three, what some of our legislators are trying to do to correct the problem. And four, what we the people can do to address this system of corruption and lawlessness. So it's Memorial Day weekend, and it's a holiday weekend to honor our fallen soldiers. And for many of us in America, it's also an opportunity to hop in the car for our first road trip of the summer. And that's what I just did. I just got back from Wisconsin from a beautiful wedding. And every week I also hop in my car every Friday to drive a six-hour round trip to share my children with my ex-husband. And so, like a lot of you, I am constantly seeing the effects of the gas prices on my budget. And, it's eating through those meager wages that I'm making. But we're going to do more today than just complain about gas prices. This is our chance to get beyond complaining and find out what is really going into those prices of those barrels of gas and why in 2012 we're still stuck with so few options to get around that. So unlike our hot dog buns and our sundresses and these resources and services we need, like gas and electricity and healthcare and the things that we use every day, they're priced differently. They're basically run by monopolies, and they give us very few options and protections. So if you're one of those people like me, you're checking the gas station website, so you're buying $50 worth of groceries so you can save 5 cents per gallon, well, what if we could start saving up to 56 cents a gallon that is going to lawless profiteers on Wall Street? How much and who should be profiteering off those barrels of oil? Well, of oil. So joining us with his multitude of expertise is Tyson Slocum. Tyson Slocum is an energy program director for Public Citizen. And Public Citizen is a national nonprofit consumer advocacy organization based in Washington, D.C. And for more information on them, you can go to their website. It's citizen.org. So Tyson was the guy on top of Enron's rolling blackout scam in California back in the day, and he is a go-to expert for PBS, MSNBC, CNBC, and the like on renewable energy, nuclear power subsidies, big oil, electricity regulation, fracking, and the list goes on. So I can't wait to talk to him. He has a list of credentials, and one of them included, which I just watched again with Stephen Colbert. So Tyson, are you there?
Hey, I'm here. Great to be here.
Hi, thank you so much for joining us on this holiday weekend.
It's
You're coming
pleasure.
In loud and clear. Great. Great article in the Huffington Post.
Thanks.
It's an important message
because, as you pointed out, a lot of Americans would like to be more environmentally conscious, and in fact, millions of us are. Americans have taken about 500,000 barrels off of the market every day over the last year because we're doing our part. We're responding to the high prices, and we're cutting back where we can. But you pointed out that for millions of families, especially working families, they have to drive to work, to take their kids to or from school. You gave some other examples. And, for those that say, oh, go out and buy an electric car or buy a Prius, there's millions of folks that are priced out of the new car market. Or the used car
That's
market
right.
is dominated by more fuel-inefficient vehicles. Most of us live in communities where local governments are cutting back on mass transit lines and service at a time that they should be expanding it because our local governments are broke. So we are in desperate need of federal solutions to finance the extra tools that working families need to have access to alternatives to our addiction to oil. And in the meantime, while we're developing those ways, and Public Citizen is at the forefront of designing ideas and plans to help serve working families, in the meantime, we've got to deal with the high prices we're seeing, and that is being driven in part by lax regulations over the speculators that are driving those higher prices. And for the most part, those speculators are big Wall Street banks, the same banks that put us in this financial mess to begin with. So we're getting hit twice, and Public Citizen's had just about enough. And we've been on this issue for years, and we've got some very basic reforms that would hold Wall Street accountable and help lower prices just enough to help working families out.
Well, that is excellent. I definitely could use your help. I'm a single mom of four. I live here in St. Paul, Minnesota. And it gets cold in the winter, so I can't imagine walking everywhere. It would be a bit tough, 30 below, and bundling all the kids up to walk to the grocery store. I can't really see it happening. So I was very intrigued by your article in the Huffington Post, especially when I read that, quote, Goldman Sachs has admitted that speculation adds as much as $23.39 per barrel to the price of crude, and that translates to 56 cents per gallon. So once they finagle the profit off that crude oil, then, you know, what do they do with that money?
Well, the Wall Street banks are at the forefront of financing and underwriting the boom in natural gas hydraulic fracturing, which thousands of communities have raised concerns about what that does to the water quality. They're investing in the coal industry. They're investing in big oil, and they're investing in fossil fuel projects around the world. So at the same time that they're price gouging oil markets, leading to higher prices for all of us here at home, they're investing those profits not just in huge bonuses for top executives, but they're also spearheading investments in keeping us addicted to the very fossil fuels that are killing us. So if we really want to break the addiction to big oil, to Wall Street, we've got to aggressively take those steps to put families in charge of our energy future. You know, there was just some news out of Germany where the other day, one-third of all of Germany's electric power came from solar energy. That's unbelievable.
Really?
Whereas here in the United States, less than 0.5% of our electricity comes from solar. I don't know if you've looked at where Germany is in the globe map lately, but they are way further north than almost all of the United States. And they have 630% more installed solar capacity. Why is that? Because Germany committed to what's known as a feed-in tariff, which essentially is a subsidy that pays people to put rooftop solar on their homes so that buildings are turned into clean power stations. That's what we need in the United States. It will assist in our manufacturing sector, and it will turn our buildings into clean energy-producing stations that could be charging up our electric cars, that could be getting us off the coal and natural gas power plants, and more importantly, killing the power of the big utilities and killing big oil. We need to move away from a centralized corporate control energy structure to a decentralized consumer controlled one. Other countries are doing it. Germany's had stronger GDP growth than us over the last 3 years. They've got a stronger manufacturing sector. They're single-handedly saving the entire euro, and yet they've got huge commitments to clean energy. So all of those Chamber of Commerce types and big oil types and Wall Street types that tell Mitt Romney and other Republicans clean energy is a job killer, it's absolutely false. Clean energy is a job creator, and it's the only thing that's going to make us competitive going forward.
Well, it sounds like we're already starting a little bit behind the game if Germany's got assertive their energy coming from that. I have a question from the chat room. They would like an explanation of the 56 cents per gallon estimate that was quoted in the article in the Huffington Post. They are wondering,
sure,
basically how do we know that speculation is adding this amount to the price per barrel?
This was an estimate that was calculated by a small investment bank on Wall Street called Goldman Sachs. I don't know if you've heard of them, but they produced a research paper for big wealthy investors that invest in their various commodity funds. Goldman Sachs sells a variety of products to wealthy individuals and large funds, and one of the products they've been offering over the last few years is opportunities to buy into commodities, the same way that you would buy shares of Apple stock or Microsoft. And in this research note that Goldman Sachs authored, they estimated what the role of speculation was in the oil market. So this is an estimate coming from the largest speculator in oil markets in the world. I happen to think that that's a reputable figure, since it's coming from Goldman Sachs, not from... And so they estimated it at nearly $24 a barrel was the influence of speculators like Goldman Sachs in the market. Now, gasoline is created from crude oil. And so there's very easy calculations where you can extrapolate, okay, here's the effect on the price of crude, and that translates to up to 56 cents for a gallon of gasoline. So addressing speculation, and there are some very simple policy reforms that would curb speculation. So curbing it is not going to deliver us a Newt Gingrich level of $2.50 for a gallon of gasoline, okay? It's still going to be over $3 a gallon because there are legitimate reasons why gasoline isn't $1.50 anymore. You know, it's a finite resource. We're running out of easy-to-get-at oil, so-called conventional oil, and we're forced to go after more expensive, more environmentally dangerous oil like deep water in the Gulf of Mexico or tar sands in Canada or oil shale. But the fact is that there's no question that speculation is playing a big role. And for working families that are struggling to pay their utility bill or their rent or their mortgage on time, saving 56 cents on a gallon of gasoline is going to go an awful long way in today's economy. So I think at a minimum, we ought to be holding Wall Street banks accountable, getting that price down a little bit, and then focusing on ways that we can truly empower households going forward in the future to use to have access to alternatives to our oil addiction.
I agree, especially if they're going to take that money and then, like you say, reinvest it in the same dirty fossil fuel industry with the fracking and all of the coal and all of the other fossil fuels that we have that are contributing to our climate changing. So I am wondering, have they always been able to manipulate the market like this? And is it legal what they're doing?
No, they haven't always been able to do it. There was this law that Congress passed while the Supreme Court was arguing about Bush versus Gore back in December of 2000. And pretty much in the dead of night, Congress tacked on to this 1,000-page omnibus spending bill, something called the Commodity Futures Modernization Act of 2000. So that snuck through Congress back in December of 2000, and its primary sponsor was a company called Enron. Enron was very active in the state of California and elsewhere, stealing billions of dollars from hardworking folks and small businesses because of newly deregulated electricity markets. And we played a big role at Public Citizen in exposing that fraud for what it was. But Enron sought to do what they did in California on a national scale. And the law that they passed, that they got passed in, at the end of 2000, was a radical change in the way that commodity markets are regulated. See, the price of oil is not set in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, or in Caracas, Venezuela. It's set by energy traders who mainly work for very large banks. Prior to 2000, those markets were dominated by oil companies and by end users. An end user is like UPS or American Airlines or any other large consumer of oil. It was a market where producers of oil and consumers of oil met to trade barrels of oil to help hedge against price risk. 80% of the market participants in those trading markets prior to 2000, 80% of the participants were people who had a stake in the game, all right, producers and users. With this rule change, what it did was it created all these new technical loopholes that gave huge new opportunities to speculators like Enron, like Goldman Sachs, to enter this market and turn it into a new profit source, a new revenue source. And just like we saw the banks get very creative with credit default swaps and securitized debt that single-handedly destroyed the U.S. and global economy, they were
creating these... Wasn't that great when that happened?
Yeah, and so in a very similar way, this law allowed them to create many different complex derivative products that allowed them to vastly increase their ability to speculate on oil. And what we saw after the enactment of this law was now 80% of the market was dominated by the Goldman Sachs rather than end users and producers. And we've seen prices skyrocket since these deregulation laws took effect. And so what Public Citizen worked on when Congress passed Dodd-Frank was closing these loopholes, ending the ability of the speculators to run the show. And the law, Dodd-Frank, does all of that. The problem is that any law needs to be interpreted and then enforced by various federal agencies. And the federal agency in charge in this area is called the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. And that agency has been under huge Wall Street pressure to weaken those rules. And as a result, they haven't yet implemented any of the Dodd-Frank rules that were intended to tighten control over these markets and limit the ability of Wall Street banks to run the show. So what we have is the status quo still. We have not had a single change to these laws, and as a result, the banks are still making a fortune at our expense.
Well, folks, if you would like to call in and join this discussion, it's been extremely interesting thus far. The number is 646-929-2495. And remember to press 1 so that you can get in the queue. If you're already on the line and you'd like to join our discussion, please press 1 so that you can be placed in the queue and I can take your call. And today, just letting everyone know if you joined in late, we have guest Tyson Slocum. He is joining us to give us information on the speculation that is occurring on Wall Street with our oil and to fill us in on the laws that were changed so that those speculators could enter the market, create a market basically to produce profits for banks instead of the end users. And after that law, you were saying, was created, it went from 80% of people being end users who were in the market to 80% of it being banks. So once again, we're seeing how those banks are getting in there. And now you said there are laws that have been passed to regulate, but they aren't being enforced.
Yeah, because,
is that right?
Because the agency hasn't finalized all of the rules yet. So we've been working with some excellent members of Congress, including Bernie Sanders, one of our heroes from Vermont, who has put together a bill, the Stop Oil Speculation Act, that would require the CFTC to quickly adopt a number of measures that would eliminate their ability to continue to speculate in these markets at the degree that they are. So there are some very easy things that Congress can do to quickly put these rules in place. But, of course, Wall Street doesn't want that to happen because they continue to make a whole lot of money. As we saw with J.P. Morgan in the last quarterly results, these banks still don't have a clue sometimes. They are engaging in hugely risky derivative bets that are so complicated even these sophisticated organizations can't even keep up sometimes. And that's the real fear that we have, is that these markets have become so large, so complex, that they've turned into Frankensteins, that the creators of these complex derivative products no longer have effective control over them. And that's when you see the potential for huge problems and risks that threaten the entire economy. In the case of oil markets, we don't see necessarily those types of systemic risk issues, but what we do see is the creative use of these derivative products is resulting in significantly higher prices beyond the supply-demand fundamentals, and that creates significant economic harm throughout the economy. And, you know, you already talked about at the beginning of the show how it affects you and the people close to you personally.
Mm-hmm.
Higher
mm-hmm.
prices are devastating for people in their family budgets right now.
Yes, it's extremely difficult. I mean, just to give you an example from my own personal experience, and I really don't have to go on at length because I'm sure every family has their own story when it comes to gas prices and energy prices, but what I earn at my job that I work at all weekend long and then a few days during the week when my children are in school, I essentially put right into my gas tank because every week I make the round trip up to our old hometown so that the kids can see their dad. And when the price of gas goes up, you know, that small paycheck that I make every week doesn't go up. It stays the same. And in fact, it gets smaller during the summer because the kids aren't in school and I can't work as much. And so while my wages are getting less and you know, being affected not only by the high gas prices, but then it turns into the high food prices. I can't tell you, I work in a grocery store, and I can't tell you how many customers come through and complain about the high prices of groceries. I mean, it really is astounding how expensive a loaf of bread is.
And that's being driven by the transportation costs to move food from the places, from the farms to the stores. So gas prices not only affect you when you're at the pump, but the businesses that need to transport these goods. And that's the vicious circle that we're in right now. And for Wall Street to take advantage of rules that they pushed for that allow them to profit at our expense, that's wrong. Again, I want to see a transparent market. I want to see a marketplace where legitimate buyers and sellers can enter into agreements. I don't want to see a market that's off the books, that's dominated by the big banks, that does not serve the interests of working people. It's not a productive use of capital. It's not a productive investment in our economy. It actually runs counter to economic production and the creation of value. It's actually destroying value. So when Wall Street talks about that proposed regulations inhibit their flexibility to do their business, what they're really talking about is that regulations are going to close the door on these so-called dark markets that only the banks can see and only they operate, but we all feel the effects of higher prices and the systemic risk that occurs from their malfeasance.
Well, I hope people will call in and join in as we hear more from Tyson. We've heard about who is doing this and what is happening, and we are going to get to what we can do about it. And Tyson, are you able to stay on with us for a little bit longer?
Let's do it. Let's talk to some folks.
All right. Excellent. Well, I have Eric here. He is waiting to ask a question, and I'm going to bring him on. Eric, are you there?
Yes. Hey, Jessica. Hey, Tyson.
Hey, how are you, Eric?
I'm doing great. I'm really learning a lot from this conversation and also from the articles that I've read, knowing that you were going to be on the show. As I said right at the beginning, I lived through the Enron-induced financial crisis in California. And I just wanted to also expand on something that Jessica said, where, you know, when she has to go buy hot dog buns or a summer dress, there's competition there. There's different companies that make hot dog buns, and they're all right there in the aisle. There's different companies that make dresses. But things like water or energy, electricity, the gas that heats our homes, those are things that people just aren't going to get by without. And I think it's really kind of cynical that that's where these large corporations decided to create these monopolies and to do this price gouging and this profiteering, because we really don't have a choice. And that was what happened to us in California. The government was forced to pay these prices. The people were forced to pay these prices. And really, the state is still in economic dire straits. I don't live there anymore, but it still, you know, just really bothers me to know that a couple of greedy, you know, profiteers have affected an entire state. I mean, this is, you know, this economy, California used to be the powerhouse of this country. It's a bigger economy than most countries other than the United States have. And they basically just brought it to its knees just to make an extra buck. And I hope, could you kind of summarize for us how they did this, how they manipulated the price of electricity, and then how they were eventually brought to justice?
Sure. First, prior to Enron's involvement in the California market, it would have been completely impossible to do what Enron did. And that's because California, like most states in the 1990s, was fully regulated, meaning you had a fully regulated monopoly that owned the power plants, moved that power, that electricity along transmission lines, and sold that power to end users. And the state had a special agency that heavily regulated every aspect of that operation. And there wasn't a penny that the utility could charge unless the state looked at the company's books, pored over all their accounting, and justified what that rate could be. And that rate regulation existed in all 50 states for 100 years. In the 1990s, Enron single-handedly changed the entire regulatory structure of the utility industry. Their lobbying influence was unbelievable at both state houses and at the federal government. And what Enron said is, look, we need to break up these well-regulated monopolies and replace it with competition, with markets. And as soon as California got rid of all of its rate protections, all of its consumer protections, what happened? Enron went in and engaged in a series of deliberate manipulation strategies, and they could do it for electricity because, as you pointed out, people don't really have a choice to use their electricity or not. You have to, especially if on a day like today in Washington, D.C., where it's 90 degrees out, and let's say you're an 80-year-old grandmother, you're going to have your air conditioning on. No matter if the electricity costs 10 cents a kilowatt hour or $5 a kilowatt hour, because you're going to have that AC on to stay alive in this kind of heat. And Enron knew that. Enron knew that electricity is a unique commodity, and they proceeded to intentionally create shortages by turning off power plants in the state, created blackouts, and what happens when you create a shortage, that commodity becomes even more valuable. And because the state no longer had any legal right to regulate the price, prices went up more than 1,000%. Enron made a fortune. They stole billions of dollars. And you said, and eventually the company was brought to justice. Actually, no, it wasn't. Of all the people that went to jail at Enron, they went to jail for accounting fraud. Not a single person at Enron went to jail for giving an order to turn off lights to hospitals, schools, or nursing homes in order to make a bigger profit, because there's no law against it. There is no law in any state or federal government against intentionally withholding power just to make more money. And for the same reason that not a single bank executive has been charged for the criminal activity that led to the financial collapse in 2008, this is the big outrage. And this is why people are occupying in public spaces at the risk of being harassed. It's because the real criminals continue to go free. And organizations like mine, Public Citizen, are at the forefront of challenging this corporate supremacy over our democracy to try and regain control back to the people where it belongs.
You know, Tyson, it seems like it would be so simple for the American people to catch up to this game. Essentially, what the oligarchs or the plutocrats or this tiny fraction of people who benefit from the system, essentially what they're saying is we're going to steal just a little bit from everybody in America. And, you know, for people like Jessica, that means more than a little bit to them. But to the oligarchs, we're just going to take $100 or $200 from them a month. We'll make a fortune. And they won't notice because it's only a small amount. And if, you know, times are hard and they begin to notice, we'll just have them focus on where the president was born or whether or not God hates fags or whether or not illegal immigrants are creating jobs or taking jobs. And then we won't have to deal with that.
Or we'll finance a $500 million advertising campaign that blames all of our problems on government regulations. That's even better.
Yeah.
Now
yeah.
In California, you have to remember, at the height of the blackouts, Dick Cheney made a big national speech. And I don't know if you remember this, but remember Enron and Ken Lay were personal friends with the Bushes, right?
Yeah.
It was the largest
contributor
to his entire political career. Dick Cheney made a speech, and he blamed the blackouts on regulation. He said, it's because California's environmental laws are so extreme that we can't build the power plants we need. So he attacked environmentalists and regulation when it was actually deregulation that was causing the crisis. But you see, facts don't matter if you can spend $100 million to buy powerful politicians and to buy airtime and Google ads to manipulate people's opinions. And that's what the Supreme Court did 2 years ago in the Citizens United decision, where they said, hey, look, corporations are being oppressed in this country. They are people for the purposes of free speech, and Congress has no right to regulate their speech in federal elections. That means that they don't just need to convince Dick Cheney to make a speech. They can do an end around and just saturate the ads, saturate the internet with as many ads as they want. Tell an alternative, false narrative about why people are struggling. And that's what, I mean, working folks, it's not that they're dumb, because they're not. They're working jobs. They're trying to make ends meet. They're trying to spend time with their family. People don't have time, or they don't have access to the information needed to do these types of policy analysis. But mm-hmm. for free, if you've got an internet connection, you can go to citizen.org. That's Public Citizen's website. And we don't charge for any of our information. We don't take corporate money. We don't take government money. We are funded by the people. And we provide information to the people about these policy issues. And we've got areas on our website where you can take action. So you can easily contact your member of Congress and remind them who they're working for. It's us, not the mm-hmm. big moneyed interests.
Right. Is it a government for the people, or is government for the purpose of profit? I mean, that's really what it comes down to. And I just, you know, we have a call that's ready to come in, Jessica, but I think if we could just reframe this, you know, because it's true, they've turned regulation into a bad word, basically just using propaganda over and over again, very expensive propaganda. But what we're really talking about is law. We're talking about whether or not we enforce laws. So let's just bring it down to the hot dog buns. You have a supermarket that sells hot dog buns, okay? And now there's an industry where shoplifters come in and just take them. And then they go and sell them elsewhere. Now, you could try to enforce the law and say you can't steal hot dog buns, but wouldn't that be killing jobs? Because those people who are stealing the hot dog buns, well, they're creating jobs because they go and they hire someone to sell them. I mean, so isn't it liberty that you're infringing upon by enforcing the law? I mean, that's basically what we're looking at the basic level of, you know, the kind of ruse that's actually working to pull the wool over our eyes. They're making us hate the idea of enforcing the law when it comes to the people who actually have the most power to influence those laws.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think they're making us hate each other. I mean, as a welfare mom, you know, I'm often blamed for all of the ills of the world and then drug tested because, you know, if I have to reach out for assistance, it must be because I'm on drugs. So then we have this other wonderful industry that can come in and make money drug testing me. Mm-hmm. I'd like to bring in my caller right now, area code 202. Thank you for holding, and I'd like to hear a comment or question for Tyson. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I just wanted to say that this has really been interesting. I had no idea Wall Street was doing that, but I guess my question is, what's the deal with Sanders' bill ending the fossil fuel subsidies?
And caller, can I get your
name? Ending fossil fuel subsidies?
Yes.
Yeah, this is an excellent piece of legislation that we've worked with Bernie Sanders on that would eliminate all of the subsidies that all of the different fossil fuel industries, coal, oil, natural gas, receive. And the largest recipients are the oil industry. The oil industry receives between $5 and $8 billion a year in subsidies courtesy of the American taxpayer. Now, this isn't really relative to or related to gas prices. This is about equity. Why on earth are taxpayers underwriting enormously profitable and polluting industries like big oil? So big oil receives several unique tax breaks, a manufacturing deduction, and some tax credits that are unavailable to other industries. And then most alarmingly, they receive a slew of royalty relief. So one-third of the more than 9 million barrels of oil that America produces, more than one-third is produced on land owned by the American people, federal land, particularly in the Gulf of Mexico, which is all federal land. There are more than 1,000 leases in the Gulf of Mexico where major oil companies aren't paying a dime for pulling oil that's worth $92 a barrel out of the ground. That's our oil that the American people own, and they're not paying us for it. And a federal investigation found that over the life of those leases, that's going to cost taxpayers more than $60 $1 million. That is one of the largest federal giveaways to any industry, and it's going to the most profitable industry in the economy. And yet every time we've worked with Bernie Sanders or other folks in Congress to push a bill just to repeal these special tax breaks and royalty relief. We're not talking about adding new punitive taxes. We're saying you're not entitled to these giveaways anymore. We're defeated every time because of the lobby influence of Big Oil and the American Petroleum Institute, which is their lobby arm in Washington, D.C. It's unbelievable. And the polls are behind us. The American people are behind us. But when push comes to shove on the floor of Congress, Big Oil wins every time. And that's a perfect example of where our democracy has lost to the highest bidder. And it's high time that more Americans learn the truth and learn that the next time we have a vote to take away Big Oil's special breaks, that we need to win it this time. And so you can go to citizen.org, learn more information about it, and take action and demand that your member of Congress either sponsor this legislation or vote to approve it.
I actually think I signed a petition for that because I think my congressman, Congressman Ellison, has been instrumental in that legislation.
If he's your congressman, you should be proud to have someone that's representing the interests of the American people. He's one of the allies that we have. And it's important, you know, for all the criticism that we have of the sellouts, it's just as important to let the good guys and the good women in Congress know that we've got their back when they do the right thing.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to scold your enemies and you've got to support your friends. That's what the process is about, so that we've got Representative Ellison's out there.
We do have a link to a petition on the Scoop It page if people would like to check it out. It is it came to me through 350.org, and I put it up on my Scoop It page about a week ago, so you might have to scroll down to get to it. But if you're interested in supporting that legislation and letting Bernie and Bernie Sanders and Ellison know that you are supporting them, that you support this legislation, that you're tired of all of this money going to these companies that are the richest companies in the world. I mean, come on, my friends. These people have all of the opportunity to invest their own money in this, and we could be using that money to invest in, you know, construction jobs for all those construction workers out there who are still suffering in that industry, and you know, pay people living wages. I mean, can you imagine if I made a living wage when I went to work 5 days a week? I might have more left over than just to put it in my gas tank. But instead, we're giving it to these oil companies. And, you know, it's something that we can do something about. It doesn't have to be this way. And I think that's the biggest piece of information I want listeners to leave with today is that, yes, this is a horror story. We have seen these laws that have been enacted and these regulations that are not being enforced and a Congress that has not been moved by the occupiers and by the protesters and by the, you know, Tea Partiers and the regular folks, you know, like me, who travel down to Washington, D.C. and say, come on, Congress, we can choose to be just. We can choose to make a different path for our country than the one we're on right now, where 80% of the decisions and the profits are being made by the banks. You know, we can do something about this. So I know, listeners, this is a bit of a horror story today on the bottom line, but there is a lot that we can do and ways that we can get involved. And so I do hope that you'll go to citizens.org, and I do hope that you'll call in with questions if you'd like to know more, if you have specific areas of interest in this topic that we haven't touched on yet. And the number is 646-929-2495. If you've already called in and you would like to join the conversation, please press 1, and then you will be entered into the queue, and I can take your call. And I do want to thank my caller that called in earlier with that really excellent question. Thank you so much. I didn't get your name. I'm sorry, but I appreciate your phone call. I do have another caller, Tyson, and caller from area code 954. for. Can you please give us your name and where you're calling from today?
Yes, my name is Shelley Burnell, and I'm in South Florida. And I have a question for your guest. Unfortunately, I'm not real bright on this topic, and I understand that the commodities futures trading is set up for buyers and sellers in a particular market. In this case, we were discussing oil. So it served a purpose, and then the laws were changed and Wall Street came in. What I don't know is what happened. Did the buyers and sellers get pushed out? Do they no longer participate in it? Does it not benefit them anymore, the trading?
The buyers and the sellers have become a minority in this market. And what that means is, because they still need the market. Let's say you're Southwest Airlines. Your largest cost of doing business is buying jet fuel every day to fuel your planes to move your passengers to where they need to go. With the price of oil changing, you know, price of oil today is about $92. 2 weeks ago, it was like $118. That's a big price swing. If you're a business, you need certainty, right? So you enter into the market to hedge your exposure to that price risk so you can lock in a price. Say, next year you agree to purchase jet fuel at $95 a barrel. So that locks in a certainty price. But what's happened is the banks enter the market, and they seek to make the market as volatile as possible. Because the more price changes there are, the more opportunities there are for profit taking. That's the way any sort of market works. The more volatility you have, the more change in price, the more opportunities for those folks to make more money. And so,
sure. So when they buy it at like $85 and then sell it at $100, then that's where they make their profit.
Right. And so we're in an active coalition. Public Citizen is a founding member of something called the Commodity Market Oversight Committee. We have airlines in our group. We've got local fuel distribution companies. We've got small businesses, and then we've got consumer groups like Public Citizen, because as consumers, we're all harmed when Wall Street controls the volume of this market and dominates the market. So that's the issue. The market is still there. It just is not treating the folks that have a legitimate role in that market. It's not treating them very well. So we have been working with them for years on trying to establish the strong oversight and protections that we need to limit the ability of Wall Street to control the market the way they do.
Hmm.
I hope
that
this stuff is a little complicated.
Well, I wouldn't feel that bad for not knowing a ton about this, because honestly, I didn't know all of this was going on either, and I've learned a lot just from the research that I did prior to the show and just this discussion itself. And so, you know, as outraged as Fox News gets about where President Obama was born or some so-called death panel, I'm really surprised that we haven't had like a 24-hour, 7 days a week story going on this, because not only, getting back to your Huffington Post article, not only are they doing this, manipulating the market through legal means, they're also ripping us off with fraud, too.
Right, because one aspect of that Enron law back in 2000 was a deregulation rule that allowed a bulk of the oil and energy trading to occur completely outside the jurisdiction of the federal government. So not only did it relax a bunch of rules that encouraged more Wall Street speculation, but it unhinged the rules that required all of the trades to occur in a format that was fully regulated and under the watch of federal regulators. So now the vast majority of the trading activity occurs in what is known off exchange, meaning outside of the venues where the federal government has access to monitoring. And we all know that, let's say you're a big bank and you're now engaging in tens of thousands of crude oil trades every hour, and almost all of those trades are occurring outside of the ability of the federal government to monitor what's going on, you can safely predict that there is going to be anti-competitive, nefarious activity outside of the watchful eye of federal regulators. We see that even nefarious activity occurs when regulators have the ability to overlook those trades. But with more and more of the activity occurring where there's no cops present, the likelihood of crimes being committed is high. And that's why we were a little disappointed when Obama announced a task force to look into crude oil market manipulation, and it was headed by the Attorney General, Eric Holder, and they didn't really do anything. And what they needed to come out and say is, look, we're going to start issuing subpoenas to get more information about what they're doing outside of the regulatory control of federal agencies. They could have done that. And if they were unable to get that information, they should have come out with a report. We cannot adequately assess what's going on in oil pricing markets because the banks refused to comply with our information requests and because almost all of their activity occurs outside of the jurisdiction of the U.S. government. So we don't have so literally they are more powerful than we are. That would have been a truthful conclusion for the Obama administration task force on oil manipulation to make. Instead, they made no statement whatsoever. And that's what we've
been saying. None at
all. Right. We need to have the administration speak truth to power. We need them to be on our side. And in the instances where they lack the proper tools to hold the powerful accountable, they need to come right out and say that super powerful banks, we cannot control them. We need additional legal assistance to rein them in and to make sure that they're not ripping us off. That's the kind of common sense talk we need from the administration when they're talking about these powerful interests. And we haven't heard that yet.
Well, there you have it, guys. I mean, we have all of this going on without any kind of oversight whatsoever. I mean, what kind of company would be run that way, where you would just let people run amok with whatever, with all of this money and all of these, you know, people's jobs and lives at stake, and yet at the same time be so concerned about welfare mothers in Florida? I do have another caller calling in. Caller at 303. Are you there? Can you give me your name and where you're calling from?
Hi, this is Niccolo K. Swit in Denver.
Nick?
Niccolo K. Swit.
Niccolo.
Yeah.
In Denver. Thanks for calling
party,
in
Denver.
Today. Excellent.
Yeah. Well, nice to drop in, and I really appreciate the work Coffee Party Central, and it's great that the work of Public Citizen, and really I'm definitely a proponent of the regulation on the speculation, you know. We can't have runs on our oil, and basically turn off the heat of older people. However, I wanted to bring this from this sort of lack of control, lack of choice, the sense of the oligarchs controlling everything, even our gas tanks, and bring it down to what we as consumers have to realize is every time we're filling that tank, we're also asking for a war, you know. That this is what we're paying. We've created a dependency on something, and the only way to sort of feed that dependency is to continue to control things internationally. One could see $1 trillion in the last 10 years as subsidy for our oil needs. The war in Libya is a subsidy for the world's oil needs, and it's now very global. So then the question is, well, what can we do? And one of the things we can do is work locally to increase public transportation service, to vote for self-taxing ourselves to create more walkable communities, to encourage schools in the neighborhoods, to encourage higher density development along transit corridors and so forth, and actually shop with our own pocketbook in mind, which means in the case for my mother, who's 89 years old and who is now living on Social Security only, the fact that she spent 20 years living near a bus route and within walkable distance of a grocery store as a conscious choice, what that did was lower demand on gas and actually lowered the price. Now, with regulation, of course, we'd be able to capture the value of that conservation of the oil. Without regulation, what's happening is, you know, we pay more even when we use less. This is what, you know, so anyway, I am ranting a little bit, but maybe that last topic in terms of how regulation might affect us to capture the conservation, which lowers the price.
Right, right. Oh, I love your rant. I hope you'll stick around with us for the rest of the show. I can come back to you again. What do you think, Tyson?
Well, yeah, the caller makes some excellent points about the bigger picture reforms. You know, we've been talking about reining in Wall Street and holding big oil accountable, but at the end of the day, we have to understand that our transportation infrastructure system was designed to run on $1 a gallon gas. And that worked great when gasoline was indeed $1 a gallon, and we didn't care about the environmental externalities of it. You know, the year 1956, that wasn't the year that Don Draper started at his advertising firm on Mad Men, people that watch the show. 1956 was the year that Congress passed the Interstate Highway Act. And 1956 was also a year that we produced 100% of our oil needs in the United States.
Really?
What happened was, yeah, I mean, today the United States is the third largest crude oil producing nation in the world. I said earlier that we produce well over 9 million barrels of oil every day. But when we use 18 million barrels of oil a day, we have to import half of our oil needs. Back in 1956, before the Interstate Highway Bill, we produced 100% of all the oil we consumed in the United States. By the 1960s, we started to import about 10%, and by the early 1970s, we were importing over 60%. And it was because we spent hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars in a transportation infrastructure system to redesign American communities around individual automobiles. And in fact, many cities had robust rail and transit and trolley systems that were demolished during this time to make way for the automobile. Now,
yeah,
you know, there were a lot of smart people that bought into this concept. But the fact is that our transportation infrastructure system is out of date. It is unable to provide an affordable, reliable, clean energy system. The number one complaint that workers have in the United States is their car commute to work, because our infrastructure system does not work. And Congress continues to appropriate hundreds of billions of dollars to maintain the status quo. And so what the caller was getting at is we're going to have to spend money not on refurbishing the roads we have, but on redesigning our transportation infrastructure and giving subsidies to working folks to help them afford more fuel-efficient vehicles, giving big subsidies to mass transit operators, to local and county government. I think that in order to encourage more use of public transit, we ought to make it free. We ought to make it free for the next 5 years, and we pay
for it. Can you imagine?
By increasing federal subsidies. First, by taking away big oil subsidies. I mentioned the $60 billion that they're going to be getting from free royalty access in the Gulf of Mexico. Let's invest that $60 billion in mass transit upgrades and encourage people to ride for free. That's going to get people interested in mass transit, and then if we actually build out the routes, we put in more rail, we expand coverage, we make it more efficient so that it's actually functional, I think we're starting to get somewhere.
I love that idea. Europe has
much larger mass transit penetration, but they also have far greater population density. They've got older urban developments that predate the age of the automobile. So it isn't that Americans are lazy or stupid. It's that we are running our system on a broken infrastructure, and we need to empower people by redesigning that infrastructure. It's going to cost money, and but unless we invest that money, we're going to continue to pay the price.
Yes, I think it also costs or takes us getting to the point where we can admit that we've done it this way, but now we need to tweak it, we need to do it a different way, and people are so used to doing it this way, and we have all of this investment, and we, you know, got all of this here, and, you know, I can just hear the arguments now, but really, you know, once we can get past that and start thinking about these ideas and really, you know, engaging people and engaging the public in what they not just need but want. I mean, I can't imagine having free transportation, what that would do for my budget. And there used to be trains that go to the town that that I take my kids to 50 years ago. And so it's sad that that's not there, that we can't just get on the train on Friday afternoon and ride the train up. But that would be time that we would have together as a family. We would be able to do homework together and talk and you know, see the scenery, and it would be much more environmentally friendly. And so I just think even just having this space where we can talk about these ideas is fabulous, and I'm so glad that you're with us. Are you able to stay on a little bit longer? How much longer can you stay on? Okay.
Probably just another 5 or 10 minutes.
Okay, excellent. I do have another caller calling in from 612. Caller, can you tell me your name and where you're calling from?
Hi, can you hear me?
Are you there?
Jessica, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Yeah,
yes.
But I guess you can't hear me.
I can hear you.
I'm out in St. Paul.
Are you there? You're in St.
Hello?
Paul?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Yeah.
You're cutting out a little bit, but I can hear you now. And your name is Virginia?
Yeah.
What's your question today?
IQ, and then it's the same item on Blog Talk Radio asking why it doesn't insist that the prices.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're cutting out. Can you call us back in on a different line, perhaps? Your connection is cutting in and out. I'm sorry. Or if you want to visit our chat room. Oh, now you're coming in. Do you want to try one more time?
No. No.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm unable to
speak. It's
okay. To hear you. If you can call back in, that would be awesome. Sorry about that.
Hey, Jessica.
The technology is amazing, but there's snaps. Hey, Eric.
I think I know what her question might have been. This is from the chat room. The question is, back in the 50s, most of the beverages came in glass bottles rather than plastic bottles. I wonder what the conversion to plastic bottles did to oil demand and oil prices.
Yeah, I don't know exactly, but plastic is a petroleum product. So there's no question that, I mean, there were advantages to plastic. There was less breakage on assembly lines and transportation. It was far lighter, so it actually was cheaper to transport over longer distances. But you can do plastic recycling, which we haven't done in earnest in this country. There are many parts of the country which are doing it, but not to the degree that we should. But in terms of the resource comparison between glass and plastic, I'm not an expert on that issue.
Well, we'll have to find out more information about that. I'll look at that and maybe post something later on the Scoop It page. I know one time right after the BP oil spill, I tried to live a day without oil. And then I realized that plastic was made out of petroleum. And I was, you know, just thinking, you know, how can I possibly do this? Because if I wanted to purchase meat, it comes in plastic. Everything comes in plastic. And then I thought, well, okay, I just took it all the way to the end in my mind, and I was thinking, if I wanted to go fishing, the fishing line is made out of plastic, you
right.
know. I finally figured out.
Doing what you can, because it is impossible to completely.
Yeah.
Zippers in your clothing are often made out of plastic. Everything, mm-hmm. But if the only oil we used was for plastics, we'd be in a great position, okay?
Yes.
So you've got to look at it relatively. You've got to do
mm-hmm.
what you can do in your personal life. But you have to remember that anytime you can have a collective action, anytime you can have a national policy, that's going to be a collective action that is amplified by many, many times. And that's what we really need in this country, is a national energy policy that understands that the era of fossil fuels has to be over. It's unsustainable, it's increasingly unaffordable, and it's endangering our climate and our communities. Renewable energy, particularly localized renewable energy, rooftop solar, electric transportation, these are the anchors for economic competitiveness in the 21st century. And that's what we need to invest in aggressively in this country. And it's very important to note that the fossil fuel interests are going to be spending hundreds of millions of dollars attacking the Obama administration for daring to talk about solar power or wind energy. And instead, they're going to demonize it, and they're going to continue with this failed mantra of drill, baby, drill. And it is wrong. And we are never going to be able to drill away to lower prices. It's not 1956 anymore. It's 2012.
Right.
And our ability to drill our way to keep up with demand is impossible. And even if we could, why would we want to do that when competing cleaner technologies are abundant? So that's what we need to invest in. And it's a high time that we start today.
I agree. It definitely comes back to the question I started us off with at the top of the show, with that Facebook post from Joseph Harms, you know, who asked, you know, if aliens were doing this to our country, what would we do? You know, would we declare them persons and give them all our money? You know, I mean, it really comes back to just asking big questions. What are we doing? Why are we doing it this way? And how can we make it different? And so I'd like to spend, since we only have a few more minutes left with you here on the show, just a little bit of time just maybe going item by item of the different ways in which listeners can get involved and maybe throw out some links that we can follow to find out more information, if that's all right.
That'd be great.
All right.
So one thing that people can do is just go to Public Citizen's website at www.citizen.org. And there you can learn about our oil addiction, about reining in Wall Street speculators, and about what types of policies we need to encourage the renewable energy transformation that our economy needs. So again, our website is www.citizen.org.
Well, I hope everyone will go to it. I do have one more caller and one more chat room comment. Would you be able to stay for those?
Let's do it.
All right. 651, this is St. Paul. I recognize that area code. Can you give me your name and where, and well, not where you're calling from, what your question is?
Yeah, it's Virginia again. I'm on a phone this time.
Oh, okay. Thanks for calling back in.
Yeah, the microphone on the headset I bought doesn't seem to work too well. I was on Blog Talk Radio yesterday with my radio show called Austerity No, which attempts to show you how as they rip you off, they rip off more from us. And this was the item about from The Guardian about oil slipping to $90. I mean, it's in 3 weeks, it's gone from 106.22 down to 90.33, and yet we're not seeing any fall in the price at the oil pumps.
That's a good point. Tyson, why don't we see the price at the gas pump change when it goes down?
Well, this is actually a very interesting phenomenon that we've seen, where the industry, since 2008, you know, I think I started off saying how Americans are using far less oil, right? We were using more than 20 million barrels of oil every day. We're now using right around 18 million. And a lot of that is because Americans are driving a lot less in response to the high prices, right? Where Americans can cut back, they've cut back. We're doing our part. So the industry, faced with sluggish domestic demand, but with increasing domestic oil production and huge refining capacity, that's where you turn the crude oil into useful stuff like gasoline and diesel and jet fuel. So what the industry has done is focused on exports. America's largest export last year wasn't Hollywood movies. It was refined petroleum products. That is America's number one export. We exported more than 3 million barrels of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel every day. That is unbelievable. So what that means is that whereas prices would be lower if we weren't exporting, by exporting, it's keeping domestic gasoline supplies tighter than they otherwise would be, and that means prices are higher. So the record exports that we're doing is resulting in higher gasoline prices at the pump. So that helps explain why crude oil prices go down, and yet we're not seeing any relief at the pump. The oil industry is simply exporting more of the gasoline that they make here in the U.S.
And Fox News wanted me to think it was Obama. I have a comment from the chat room from Eric. He's going to read it for me since I can't access it. Eric, are you there? Eric?
Oh, sorry. Yeah. I actually typed it into the board so you could read it yourself, Jessica. Oh, but that's okay. This is from Shelley. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, this is from Shelley, who was a caller earlier, and she's on the chat board. And she says, she says, I want to express my gratitude to Tyson for his unbelievable ability to explain an extremely complex subject so succinctly. I haven't even wanted to read about this subject before because it is so intimidating, and now I'm motivated to gain more knowledge.
Oh, that's excellent.
Well, that's
thank you so much, Shelley.
And it's but it's really forums like non-commercial radio like this that are essential. So I'm happy to be participating.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. And I know that you probably have stuff to get to, so I don't want to keep you over. Even though I think I did just a little, but thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it was
really
absolutely it was my pleasure. I think you've got a terrific program, and I hope I have the opportunity to appear with you again.
Thank you very much. I would love the opportunity, and I hope that everybody will take the opportunity to go to Public Citizen and learn more about this and follow those links and get involved, because there is so much that we can do. And to change this horror story into big ideas and realistic measures that will bring us those communities where our transportation, our public transportation could be free by taking oil subsidies and investing it elsewhere, and all of the other ideas that I'm sure would come out of this amazing country filled with excellent citizens who just need the information so that they can get involved, because it is something that touches each of us, getting around and having the energy and the fuel to power our lives. And so you've just been an incredible guest, and I've learned so much, and I hope that you will join us again.
Absolutely. Take care. Have a great and safe Memorial Day weekend.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye. Guys, thanks so much for all of the excellent calls, too, for Tyson and the questions. It was really great to hear from all of you in Florida and Colorado and Denver. I do still have Niccolo with us here in Virginia here, and so Niccolo, I really appreciated your comment about the wars that we are having to fight to continue to protect our interests abroad, and those interests often include oil. I'm going to see if you are willing to come back in and join me on the discussion. Oh, my chat board is not working.
I'm here.
Ask Eric. Are you here?
I'm on the air, I guess, on the
you
wire.
You are on the air. Well, I don't know if it's a wire anymore, because we're on, well, I guess online is kind of like a wire, but thank
yeah,
you for that point.
Yeah,
you know, it is Memorial Day weekend, and I think it's a very apropos point to make.
What a great guest you had, and how succinct he brought everything to the point, you know, the Highway Act and, you know, this whole lifestyle that we've created around the dependency on $1 a gallon oil, or it was even less when I was a child, and how can we make those changes? And you know, that the regulation has to work in concert with the other changes on the demand side and on the infrastructure side. You know, the one needs the other to really reinforce a new way of doing things. You know, so just love what Public Citizen does. And appreciate it.
I just love it, too. And I just can't believe all of the information that we learned that, like I said, why if Fox News is so outraged about a very small fraction of welfare recipients being on drugs, I mean, if they're willing to invest all this money.
Yeah, I turn
actually,
it off.
I heard
you know, a lot of that's just distraction. But let's
right,
say just
right.
Focusing on the price of gas, okay, alone is distraction, too, you know.
Yeah.
There's many sides of that. Yeah. There's advantages of the price going up. On the other hand, we should be rewarded for conserving, you know. Then it should go down when we conserve, you know.
Right. Well, and we should have people, like journalists like that, with those big, huge TV stations and those big, huge microphones talking about this and informing us, because, you know, we have bankers who are – basically like Eric's excellent illustration with the hot dog buns, you know. You've got the hot dog buns in the store. Somebody comes and steals them and then goes and sells them somewhere else, and, oh, they get to do that because they're creating jobs. I mean, it's a perfect illustration for what's going on. And, you know, it's just astounding that, you know, even I'm a huge public radio listener, National Public Radio, Minnesota Public Radio, and – you know, why haven't our airwaves been flooded with this very important information when it's out there for free?
It strikes at our American dream, you know. It hurts. The gas price hurts. And it hurts
the
poor people worse, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Oh, I know.
And so
I mean,
it's not good news. And there's sacrifice on all sides of this issue. It's not good news. And so... So the distraction is there. I mean, one of the confusions that I'm finding around this subject is that people confuse, like, the addiction to oil, which was a quote, you know, by Bush, you know, right after 9/11. You know, it was really the force was we have to solve our addiction to oil. You know, well, we chose the one path, as your guest intimated, you know, which was drill, baby, drill, and try to get it on, you know, claim to have accomplished something on the supply side of it, create enough supply, so forth. But the reality is we can't.
Right.
But
do you remember when
addiction is actually not an oil addiction, to get back to the hamburger buns, okay? It's a mobility addiction. It's the way we designed our cities to depend on the car, okay? And we can't transition to electric cars fast enough. Right now it's about 2% of the total, or 3%, I think. You know, there's been a big onslaught of sale of other cars recently that aren't electric. So, you know, how can we address the mobility addiction? That's the real problem. And it's also connected to other problems we're having, like childhood obesity and so forth. They find that people that walk 10 minutes to a bus stop every day are much healthier than people that don't. Duh, you know?
I agree. Well,
so,
Nicola, I hope you'll come on my show again.
And where are the sidewalks and where are the bike paths, okay? Where are the crosswalks?
Right.
Let's get real.
Right.
Where are the how does the stroller and the mother get across the 6-lane highway in the middle of the city?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
how?
Definitely.
It has to work.
Those are,
you know,
those are
really
excellent points. And I hope that you'll join in again. I'm almost at the end of my show, so I am gonna close out with a tribute for Memorial Day. I do, though, want to remind people of the State of the Union address when Bush said we'd all be driving around using hydrogen by 2015. Anybody remember that? And did the American people hold him accountable? I am not seeing any hydrogen stations going up in my neighborhood. In fact, I actually heard the other day on NPR they were talking about how truckers are going to start using natural gas to fuel their trucks. They're actually putting up fuel stations for natural gas. And how are we getting our natural gas? Well, now we're starting to frack for our gas, and that is causing environmental devastation as well. So, Nicola, excellent points, and thank you so much for calling in. I hope you'll listen again and call in again next week, Virginia. Thank you also as well, and I will definitely check out your Blog Talk Radio show. And you live in my city. That's so cool. I have a note here from Eric. He said, Bush said we had an addiction to foreign oil. Domestic oil is the author of the Drill Baby Drill slogan. I am not sure. Eric, are you there? Do you want to elaborate a little bit on that real quick? I think you're muted. Okay. Well, Niccolo brought up a great point, too, and that is that our wars that we're fighting all over the world, over in the Middle East, are often fought because we want to protect our interests. And it's undeniable now. I mean, now that we didn't find the WMD and we have the information on what was going on in the administration before we went to war. Oh, Eric, are you there? Oh, hold on. I'll unmute you again. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, okay, you can certainly just continue. Just the reason I typed that is that I think Bush's instinct was to not be dependent on foreign oil, because even though he might be less likely to acknowledge it than others, even he would have to say that the reason why we are going to war in the Middle East is because of oil. And also because his family and his friends are so invested in domestic oil, that's why the sloganeering "Drill, Baby, Drill," you know, really emanates from a desire to make maximum profit and by exploiting the natural resources, as Tyson was talking about, basically taking
sure.
the resources that belong to we the people and giving it away to these profiteers in the name of national security. Insane. Anyways, continue your thought about Memorial Day.
Well, I would like to just read a poem. It's called The Truly Great, and I want to acknowledge the people who have served our country over there and who have given ultimate sacrifice.
And because it is Memorial Day weekend and I am the daughter of a veteran, I bring you this poem by Stephen Spender, and I'm sorry if I run out of time on this. It will be on the podcast, and it will be recorded. Stephen Spender is the truly great. I think continually of those who were truly great, who from the womb remembered the soul's history through corridors of light where the hours are suns, endless spring, endless and singing, whose lovely ambition was that their lips, still touched with fire, should tell of the spirit clothed from head to foot in song, and who hoarded from the spring branches the desires falling across their bodies like blossoms. What is precious is never to forget the essential delight of the blood drawn from ageless springs, breaking through rocks and worlds before our earth, never to deny its pleasure in the morning's simple light, nor its grave evening demand for love. Never to allow gradually the traffic to smother with noise and fog the flowering of the spirit. Near the snow, near the sun, in the highest fields, see how these names are fetid by the waving grass and by the streamers of white cloud and whispers of wind in the listening sky. The names of those who in their lives fought for life, who wore at their hearts the fire's center. Born of the sun, they traveled a short while toward the sun, and left the vivid air signed with their honor. Thanks, guys. Thank you for listening today, for our excellent guest, who I hope you will find out more at his website, Public Citizen. It's citizen.org. And I hope you will join us again next week for another show and call in with your questions and your comments. And I hope that you have a fabulous Memorial Day weekend. And again, thank you to everyone whose family has been touched by war. God bless. Have a great one.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.